are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
Wednesday, May 9th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Trump sinks the Iran deal. Meanwhile, his personal lawyer appears to have been running a pay-to-play operation, servicing not only Russian oligarchs, but American ones and Swiss ones too. Meanwhile, Gina Haspel, testifying in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee at this moment, promises not to restart the torture program. Also, she's a liar and a torturer. Corporate opioid pushers grilled on the Hill earlier this week. One apologized. Primary day, not so good for Republican congresspeople, but Dems still need an agenda. Kim Jong-un releases three Americans, and career diplomats implored Trump not to expel over 300,000 Central American immigrants to no avail. New York seeks a new attorney general and a prosecutor to investigate the old one. Oh, and incidentally, Trump hired a private spy agency to discredit the people who worked on the Iran deal just cuz. And Republicans in the House push a VA privatization bill. All that and more if we don't pass out on today's Majority Report. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the perfectly timed opportunity for us to redo the and make some improvements to the studio, of course, took place on, today itself may be one of the busiest news days that we've had ever. But certainly the past 2 days added to that. If you notice a little bit of difference in the sound of my voice, it's because we don't have our regular microphones up yet. We have physically rebuilt the studio. We still have some infrastructure stuff to do, but that will happen over the next couple of days. And as you're watching, you may not notice any big difference at this moment, although we're going to have Matt will pan across. We've added a camera. We're going to add one or two more. There'll be webcams, of course. And we're going to introduce a wide shot to our video. And our setup here is also going to allow for a more comfortable situation with in studio guests and with doing other shows. You can pick up another mouse over there, guys. There's one in the shelving there. There should be hanging around there somewhere.
Doing debate coverage.
Yes. Debate coverage. There's going to be a lot of it. This setup is going to allow us to sort of build some stuff off it. And I want to thank George. I don't know if he's listening today, but we had one of the best set designers in the business, period. I'm not being this is not hyperbole.
He's the best in the business. We got him. There's no one better. It's true. It actually is true. It was really good.
Yes, but beyond that, he was incredibly generous with what he provided us. I don't want to undercut his business in any way. But he was, it was shocking. And so thank you, George. The generosity and the both the execution and the design. And of course, Bob was here too, setting up, who works with George, who was also amazing. And also, I suffered a slight concussion during the course of the build because we.
I was so disappointed. I missed it.
It was pretty disturbing, actually.
Really? Did you actually really hurt yourself?
Oh yeah.
Jesus.
That pipe, that cross pipe. We have piping in here now for the lighting, and we're going to add one or two more lights. But it's going to be easy to put up. And this is also in the event that we lose, get priced out of this office in the future. We can reconstruct this studio anywhere now, because all will come apart into pieces and can go with us. But that big 2-inch piping, we needed one other person, and it's slammed into my head.
Wow.
What are you going to do?
Sam said after I came in later, and Sam was like, Michael, Social Security is not solvent. And I said, what the hell happened to you?
I did not lose consciousness, but I think I did have a mild concussion. All right, let's start with, well, let me just, we've got a ton of stuff to go through today. And not only are we catching up with stuff, but we have just a ton of stuff to go through. Obviously, want to talk about the Iran deal. I mean, everything really in that list bears some mention. But first, let me just start with this. I own two Casper mattresses, and the second one was for sad reasons that we've talked about in the past. But at the very least, at least I'm having a good night's sleep. And that's the important thing. Casper is a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. I know that there must be some product I have that I've been more happy like with at one point than my Casper mattress, but at the moment I can't think of it.
Like Space Invaders when you were a kid or something?
Well, I didn't buy Space Invaders. That just existed. I don't know what you mean by that.
Like oh, that was an arcade game, my bad.
It was an arcade game.
My bad.
I did not have the original Atari. I did not. That just didn't happen. My friend Charlie had it. I went over there. I played that constantly. In fact,
can I come over, Charlie, please?
I didn't even ask after one you point. Just, oh. I would just come home and Miss Fisher would just be like, what are you doing here? Casper has three models, the original Casper, the Wave, and the Essential. They are perfectly designed to soothe and cradle your natural geometry. Not to mention, the breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulates your body temperature throughout the night. That is my favorite part about it. I sleep hot, folks. It's delivered right to your door in a small, how-do-they-do-that type of box with free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada. Yes, returns, folks, because you get 100 nights to sleep on that bed. And if you decide on night 99, you know what? I don't like it. You ship it back completely free. You spend one third of your life sleeping. You should be comfortable. Check out Casper. I guess they've got a podcast now. An entire podcast about Casper.
That's cool.
Interesting. Get $50 toward a select mattress by visiting casper.com/majority and using majority at checkout. That's casper.com/majority. Offer code majority for $50 off your mattress purchase. Terms and conditions apply. Check it out. casper.com/majority. Also, there's also like few ads that you're sort of like, oh, I would actually like sort of brag about this ad.
That's what I said. I said this right? One. I said one of the minerals you can be very, or actually both of them in different ways, very excited about.
Yes. Well, I mean, people know about the New Yorker magazine. It's an iconic magazine. It represents the truly best writing in America today. The stories that have come out of the New Yorker in just the past, like what, 3 days? Have completely changed.
I think that was like 24 hours ago, the Schneiderman.
The Schneiderman
piece.
Story. All that work that Ronan Farrow's been doing. The one on the spying of the Iran, the Iran deal. I mean, these are just, that's just the past week in terms of news stories. Never mind, you know, you get fiction in there, you get lighter stuff, but The New Yorker is one of those magazines where the fact that it's written in The New Yorker establishes it as something that's real.
Good reviews, too.
It's true.
Good reviews. I mean, it's...
You can skip most movies. You just pop back in The New Yorker, read a really good review, and then say,
that's what I probably should have been doing for a long time. Yeah. But also book reviews, art that's going on in the city, and more poetry and literature, of course. Those cartoon caption contests, which I've always thought that I would do, and I never did.
I'm actually shocked you haven't done that.
I've contemplated it. You can even access their complete archive featuring digital replicas of every issue of the print magazine from 1925 with a subscription to The New Yorker. Don't wait. Go to newyorker.com/majority. Receive 12 issues for $12.
What? That's an amazing deal.
That is an amazing deal. Plus a free tote bag. Enter my code majority to unlock 50% off your subscription. Get it delivered to your mailbox, inbox, or both by choosing between print, digital, or a combination. Subscribe to The New Yorker and read something that means something. That's 12 issues for $6. What? Okay, wait. So check this out. If you go to newyorker.com/majority, you'll get 12 issues for $12. If you put in coupon code majority, you get $6 off. Plus, you get a free tote bag. You're going to get a second subscription. When you go to newyorker.com/majority and enter my code majority at checkout. newyorker.com/majority, enter my code majority at checkout. You'll get $6 off. You'll get 12 episodes, 50 cents an episode plus the tote bag. All right.
An issue.
An episode?
I do like episodes in The New Yorker.
Episodes in The New Yorker. Each one is like an episode. All right, check it out. All right, let's get into this. Let's start with, let's go low to high on the Iran deal here. We'll get to the substance of this. We have been talking about this, the potential for this for obviously a year and a half. And I think there are few things that Donald Trump, I suppose, Supreme Court, judiciary, and maybe this deal are and there may be a couple other things, but that's basically it. When you're talking about destruction or problems that are created that will resonate well beyond this administration, Donald Trump could get struck by a bus tomorrow. And the damage that he has done in terms of the judiciary and the damage that he has done in terms of crashing this deal cannot be unwound. And we're going to see a series of cascading events and situations that are going to make just how problematic what Donald Trump has done evident. And hopefully one of those things will not be a full-on war. But this is going to ripple through for possibly decades, probably decades. I mean, not just narrowly tailored to Iran, but also in terms of Europe and in terms of what we do around the world.
A prospective deal with North Korea?
Prospective deal with North Korea, but really, like, any deal.
Everywhere.
Any deal. Like, the idea that our system is such that a president could come in and with absolutely no justification, no support from his national security state, no support from allies, and reverse this thing on a whim, because there's really no other rationale behind it.
And of course, these are the same people who had endless tantrums about Obama's red line comment in Syria, even though he actually just had a deal that he negotiated with Russians on chemical weapons.
I mean, you know, whatever. The hypocrisy
is
obvious.
How can anyone come get into, and we saw this with the Paris Accords, but this is obviously far more, the implications is far more significant. How can anyone make a deal with the United States if our system is such that a lunatic can get into office and then just start to willy-nilly reverse things? Like it fundamentally undermines not just our national security, not just our foreign policy. It undermines the international modus operandi. I mean, for actually getting things done. It is equivalent in some respects, but actually worse to a guy like McConnell going out and crashing the way that we pick Supreme Court justices. Except for in this instance, it's not two parties that are dealing with each other. It is multi-parties, multiculturals, and there's one thing that we found that we could come together and agree on, and it's like the establishment of such agreements like this, that they will have durability despite domestic changes in politics. And this blows that up. But we'll have more to say on this. And you know, reports that supposedly Israel thinks that Iran is invading or attacking Israel via Syria, you know, is just the... we're going to see a lot of this. There's a reason why Bibi went out there with his Price is Right presentation last week. And again, the Israeli national security state, more or less, was against crashing this deal.
They almost uniformly were against crashing this deal. And even where it's like negotiating the Hezbollah thing, which is really what he's getting at, would be something that could be extended out of this. And now this has totally collapsed that possibility.
Yeah, it's really disturbing. But let's take just a slightly a detour here and do something just lighter as we circle
back.
Now
a little bit
around.
Of idiocy,
right.
About
right.
Iran.
Well, so in this jam-packed news week, we had a new head of the NRA appointed, and of course it is Ollie North. You may or may not remember Ollie North as a figure from the Iran-Contra affair. In fact, he was the primary figure. In fact, he was the one who at the very least orchestrated the arms sales to Iran illegally, including anti-tank missiles, including serious weaponry that you could only do if you were basically running a gun-running operation out of the back door of the U.S. military.
Well, it's nice to see he landed on his feet.
Oh, yeah. He's landed on his feet many times.
Well, as the quick reaction for us, we'd like you to react to an L.A. Times tweet regarding your new position. The NRA just named one of the most infamous gunrunners in the world to be its president. So as a former gunrunner, how do you feel about that?
Well, you know, that's the kind of thing that's, by the way, gotten to be very successful. Mm-hmm. I'll give you another example. The folks who are doing the disinformation campaign just don't say slanderous things like that about me.
All right, wait, pause it. Wait, whoa. He's not answering the question. How does that make you feel that you're a gun runner? Oh, it's been very successful reporting history.
Wait, he wasn't a gun runner? Is that what he's trying to say?
He seems to be trying to avoid the entire question.
Huh. I thought he just said that it was slanderous to say that he was a gun runner. I'm genuinely confused.
All right. Hold on. Are we okay?
We're good. A couple of
hiccups. All right,
hiccups.
Continue.
To do is starting asking questions of reporters to have them go and ask the NRA, are you really missing $10 million out of your accounts? Is it true that the NRA has lost firearms? Those are the kinds of things that, of course, our colleagues in the mainstream media mm-hmm. are more than willing to ask. And the bottom line of it, it's a totally fictional story.
Right. All right. Let's.
And I'm not even going to grace. Look, everybody knows what I did back in the 80s.
All right, pause it. Wait. So wait a second. There are stories out there that the NRA is missing $10 million of their funds and that they've lost guns, too. We Googled that. We can't find any of that.
It's all coded.
Well, it's interesting. Apparently, they're getting questions about this, and Ollie North wants to go out and get
there might be, like, inauguration stuff going on, but it's I'm not sure if that's specifically what he's talking about here.
It's very strange. Apparently, he's trying to get ahead of some reports out there about missing $10 million and a whole cache of guns.
So you just air it? Just going to air this?
You got to get ahead of the story. All right, so go backwards a little bit. Let's hear how he wraps this up.
Arms. Those are the kinds of things that, of course, our colleagues in the mainstream media mm-hmm. are more than willing to ask. And the bottom line of it, it's a totally fictional story.
Right. All right. Let's.
And I'm not even going to grace. Look, everybody knows what I did back in the 80s for our president.
It was Iran-Contra. You weren't a gun runner. Absolutely not. All right.
Right.
And you're right. If people don't know this story, Google it because we're short on time.
All right. Now let's talk about something.
People should Google
these it. Mics pick up too much laughter with a clip like that. Jesus.
They should Google it. They should definitely, people should definitely Google. We don't have time for the actual substance of why we brought you on here.
Oh, just play around with, you know, death squads, Iran, cocaine, Contras. You could just a lot of Google exploring you could do with all
we've got to shut those windows over there. But that's like, pretty impressive. That
just, I like how unapologetic he is.
That's the way that he did it back then, too. I mean, I don't know if... You're probably too young for those hearings. Were you even born during those hearings?
I wasn't.
Oh, geez. Yeah, 85. No, he got up there. There was a lot of like, it was one of the sort of the classic, Ollie North's classic thing was sort of like, if love in this country means that is a crime, then guilty. You know, it was that type of thing. His whole testimony was basically just that after that after that.
If using cocaine proceeds and money for illicit weapon systems to Iran gets funneled back to death squads that kill nuns for my president, well, indeed, sir.
Yes. Guilty as charged. And then does he go on? Then they go on to ask him about just something completely unrelated to him being a gun runner.
You weren't a gun runner. Absolutely not. All right.
Right.
And you're right. If people don't know this story, Google it.
Pause it. I love it. You know, if you're a news commentator or a host of a show and you have to say to your guest, you weren't a gun runner. Like, I think there's a good indication that that person was probably a gun runner. Go ahead.
Time. All right, now let's talk about something else you know intimately about, and that's the struggles with Iran really since 1979. A deal was signed in 2015 that would limit their nuclear program. Not many people thought it was a good deal. The Senate didn't approve it. The House didn't approve it. And clearly this president's not for it. At 2:00 today, indications are we're walking away from that deal. Is that the right move?
Yes.
Why?
You want me to elaborate? Because the Iranians have been lying. Every time their lips move, they're lying. The Iranians were working with the North Koreans until just a few weeks ago on their nuclear program and their ICBM program. And the Europeans who simply want to keep things as they are for the trade value, the fact is, if we sanction them again, we ought to sanction anybody else who does business with them. That'll stop the Euros from helping to bail them out while they cheat on this program.
Well, first off, this guy, that is all that we're doing. We don't have primary sanctions on them as a function of this deal. We have secondary sanctions that are explicitly, we will sanction European entities that do business with Iran. So that is exactly what it means to walk away from the Iran deal. But the idea that this guy's saying that they lie every time their mouths are moved is laughable, and that this is completely different from since 1979 when we've been at odds with Iran.
Well, he hasn't been at odds with Iran since 1979 when he was selling weapon systems illegally to fund illegal war in Central America. But also he's doing this ICBM thing, which I've never even heard the North Korea story, so that could just be like a Newsmax thing.
That's bound up with the $10 million that are missing.
Right, exactly. I won't even grace that with a comment. But the ICBM thing is the poison pill that they've always tried to use to kill the deal, which is namely throw in things that are not specifically nuclear to try to destroy it. So they're playing the same games that they did back when it was being negotiated.
This deal, from the very beginning, was narrowly tailored to deal with specifically what we hope to achieve from North Korea, which is to have them denuclearized. And in fact, not only was it narrowly tailored by design, it was narrowly tailored. This was the suggestion from the Israelis at the time. Everyone in the foreign policy establishment said, you bite off a smaller part of the apple, and the part of the apple that is really deadly for everybody, and that being the nuclear program. So this has been a longstanding critique, and it was a critique that was built into the actual development of the deal. In other words, on some level, I think the reason why this deal was encouraged was because there would be room for folks like John McCain, frankly, to criticize it back in the day.
Absolutely. And on the flip side, they didn't go after areas of joint agreement, frankly, like around groups like ISIS, precisely because on both sides, a more dovish and more hawkish side, it was just agreed, we're not doing anything bigger here than that specific program. So it's incredibly dishonest.
So here is the there are a couple of scenarios going forward that are possible. Scenario one is that the Europeans basically defy the United States, and they continue to trade with Iran, and it's more expansive than just Europeans, but it's going to be most dramatic in terms of sanctions. They continue to trade with Iran, and we start to sanction these companies, and we create a greater rift between ourselves and European allies. And Iran hews to the deal and continues to allow weapons inspectors into Iran, and stays within the regime outlined in this deal that, over the course of the next, I guess, 9 years now or so, would materially limit and inhibit and prevent their development of nuclear weapons. After 10 years, they're still not allowed to get nuclear weapons, but the constraints on them begin to loosen, and theoretically they could then break the deal. But there's no way for them to develop nuclear weapons under the regime as it exists. This, of course, is what even Mad Dog Mattis said the other day in Senate testimony.
And, you know, they haven't actually done a huge amount of trade. But I think that they will keep the deal, because the primary reason to keep the deal is just because of the security benefits. Like, everybody exaggerated the economic stuff, and their trade relationships are mostly with Russia and China, which will obviously continue regardless. So the Europeans, I'm sure at the very least, we'll say, yeah, let's keep being diplomatic and having inspectors in there. And maybe on the back end, it will slow some business agreements, because that's a major headache. But I can imagine they'll pull out of it.
So the scenario you're talking about is where basically any companies that were planning to do business with Iran don't, but they reserve the right to do
it. Exactly.
They just don't subject themselves to American sanctions. I mean, that would be the best case scenario. And apparently John Kerry was going around a couple, you know, there was a story in the Boston Globe maybe a week or two ago about John Kerry going around basically as like a shadow entity trying to maintain this agreement without the United States, which theoretically would be the deal killer. If the other option is that the Europeans, for whatever reason, announced that they're dropping out of the deal too, so that they're not subject to other sanctions, I guess. And the Iranians just say, okay, we're going to start developing our nuclear weapons tomorrow. And then this, of course, is exactly what I think someone like Bibi Netanyahu wants, because that becomes then the predicate for some type of bombing run where they supposedly take out a nuclear bomb-making facility in Iran. I mean, that's how this would go down. So best-case scenario, Donald Trump and the United States are ignored and are considered unreliable partners and irrelevant to a large extent, and some entities will bite the bullet in Europe and not not do business with Iran, and this thing can go forward. But it is, it really is problematic. I mean, I don't know how we, you know, we'll see what happens with North Korea, but what possible
great negotiating start? Like, hey, the model agreement that could probably work for us. Yeah, we just junked it.
And we should also tell you that if we make an agreement, it may not last more than 3 years.
Well, that's actually what the Supreme Leader said, except for what he said when he gave Rouhani, he said, you have permission to negotiate, but something like never trust the great Satan, to paraphrase. And of course, Trump was like, I will make it my mission to validate all of his statements.
I hate to use this phrase, but hold my beer.
Yeah, right.
Right? I mean, that's the...
hold my Big Mac.
Man, I'm going to go down a YouTube K-hole tonight on Iran-Contra, I think.
Oh, you should.
Yeah, that's a good one. To go
I
on.
Didn't realize North was so gangster.
Oh, he's quite gangster.
Oh, yeah. In fact...
gangster, not gangster, though.
Now that I recall it, I think it's possible I have... is it possible I have refrigerator magnets from that? I just remember...
I would say it's very possible.
I don't... It's possible. I took some pictures of my TV. I don't know if that could have been. I guess it could have been. Yeah, actually, it could have been. All right. Well, let's go to the Gina Haspel hearings today, and then we will get to the Cohen story. I mean, the Cohen story is massive, and it really doesn't matter if you are one of those people who are convinced that talking about Russia collusion will bring about World War III. The idea that the president's personal attorney is running essentially there's two things associated with this that, and we'll get to it, but one, he's either nakedly selling influence. I mean, just naked in a way that is almost like part of your skin is rubbed off. That naked.
Translucent.
But the other thing, if you listen to this guy, Avanti, the lawyer who brought this stuff about, is that there, just from the way that he's talking, there seems to be, he seems to be implying, and very carefully not to say this, that there are, that there's evidence that the money's actually getting funneled to Trump. Do we have the, I don't think we have that clip. We don't, we'll talk
nothing
about him.
Will nothing satiate your bloodlust for war with Russia?
I mean, I saw him on, I saw him on O'Donnell last night, and
Wait. I don't. So there's a slush fund that goes through Cohen to pay these women off, but then it gets back to Trump somehow. Is that what he?
Look,
is that
it's actually, an LLC.
Yeah, right.
All right.
Okay.
Now
sounds like a good business model.
It's an LLC where, well, we'll walk through this.
Okay, that's
amazing. I want to talk about Gina Haspel because
I want
this
to learn
is also
from
really
this guy.
As we speak, I believe Gina Haspel is still in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee. Gina Haspel, as you know, was, and it's been reported, the Daily Beast continues to stand behind this reporting. ProPublica backed off it just a little bit. But she oversaw a black site in Thailand where there was multiple people tortured. And yesterday, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who I do not believe was ever at that black site, but may have been somewhere else, apparently, via his lawyer, wants to submit a 6-page statement that has direct bearing on Gina Haspel. Nobody knows what it is. They're going through a lawyer right now. Mohammed was held in black sites in Afghanistan and Poland. He was subjected to the to waterboarding 183 times over 15 sessions. He was stripped naked, doused with water, slapped, slammed into a wall, given rectal rehydrations without medical need, shackled into stress positions and sleep deprived for about a week by being forced to stand with his hands chained above his head. He is requested to provide unspecified information to the intelligence committee. I don't know if we'll ever know what that is, but the committee started out with folks from Code Pink protesting. Here is a clip of that now. So a lot of those Code Pink folks reminding some of the senators, hopefully, that you don't want to reward torture, which is almost laughable at this point. Let's go in and listen to it. Well, one of the things that Haspel also was intimately involved was that she drafted the cable by her boss, Rodriguez, I think his last name was, I think it was Frank Rodriguez, issued to destroy the video evidence of their torture. And here is Chairman Burr, Raymond Burr, asking, is it Raymond Burr? No.
Richard Burr.
Richard Burr. Raymond Burr was an actor. Richard Burr asking Haspel about those torture tapes.
Direct the destruction of the detainee interrogation videotapes. Can you describe for members your role in those events?
Senator, yes, I can. In 2005, I believe it was fall of 2005, I was chief of staff to the deputy director for operations, that is head of the clandestine service. The tape issue had lingered at CIA for a period of about 3 years. I believe the tapes were made in 2002, and over time there was a great deal of concern about the security risk posed to CIA officers who were depicted on the tapes. Those security issues centered on the threat from Al-Qaeda should those tapes be irresponsibly leaked. Mr. Rodriguez, who was the DDO at the time, the Deputy Director for Operations, has been very upfront and has made it clear on a number of occasions publicly that he and he alone made the decision to destroy the tapes. I would also make it clear that I did not appear on the tapes, as has been mischaracterized in the press. However, as chief of staff, and I believe like everyone at the agency at that time, we were extremely concerned about the security risk that was posed to our officers. We were aiming to do two things, to adhere to U.S. law, but at the same time reach a resolution that would protect our officers. There were numerous legal consultations over a period of years at the agency. Our lawyers were very consistent in saying to us that there was no legal requirement to retain the tapes, no legal impediment to disposing of the tapes. I'm not a lawyer, but I believe the basis for that judgment was the fact that there was a complete and written detailed record of the interrogations.
All right. This is incredibly disingenuous. First off, she's both wanting her cake and eating it too, right? I had no part in the decision. There was one person who made this decision. It was Jose Rodriguez. He was the head of the clandestine services. No one else involved in this. But we all shared the same feeling in terms of the rationale behind it, which, of course, is irrelevant if she had no part in it whatsoever. And the idea that there was no legal impediment to it is dubious at best. They didn't follow any of the standard procedures when they destroyed these tapes, which is when she drafted that memo, the standard procedure would have been to inform CIA lawyers that that memo was going out. They should have been CC'd on it. They never were on that memo that called for the destruction of the tapes, that basically ordered the cable of their destruction. And in addition to having lawyers for Moussaoui asking for those tapes starting in 2003 for ongoing for at least 2 years before they destroyed them, there was also requests from the Senate Judiciary Committee to get those tapes multiple times. There was also a judge who was pushing for the release of those tapes in the trial of Moussaoui. The DOJ lied to the court saying that the CIA didn't have those tapes or had been lied to by the CIA. The ACLU had a FOIA request that was in and a federal court order that was ordering the CIA to turn over those tapes. And so they were well aware of what was going on. And here is Mark Warner hammering home that point, that it is beyond credulity that Gina Haspel was not aware that there was, at the very least, a congressional action that was going to compel them to hand over those tapes.
I recognize the vice chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to follow up on the question around the tapes, Ms. Haspel. November 4th of 2005, then Senator Levin introduced legislation to create a commission model on the 9/11 commission to look into the agency's treatment of detainees. 3 days later, you drafted the cable. 4 days later, the tapes were destroyed. Were you aware of Senator Levin's actions? And the timing seems very close to acting on behalf of potential congressional action. And in Mr. Morrell's statements, there was comments that your superior, Mr. Rodriguez, was aware that two White House counsels, the counsel of the vice president, the DNI and the DCIA, and the HPC ranking member had all expressed opposition or reservations about the destruction of the tapes. So were you aware of those facts that Mr. Rodriguez was at least aware of, and were you aware of the actions of Senator Levin when you drafted your memo and then had the tapes subsequently destroyed?
Senator Warner, what I recall were the security issues surrounding the tapes. I don't recall pending legislation. I just don't recall
what
that.
About the issue of...
Pause it for one second. The idea that she would not be aware of pending legislation involving those tapes is so impossible to even entertain as to be a joke. And the idea that it wasn't burned in her mind that, man, we got away with it. We were able to get those tapes destroyed just maybe weeks.
I feel like if Chile was considering some sort of secrecy change, the CIA would know about it. So that America wouldn't.
Of course.
If Namibia was. I mean, and this has also been a top priority of the CIA to deal with the fallout of all of these things over the course of all of these administrations.
Well, let's reverse engineer this. If her boss can order those tapes destroyed, then her boss is intimately involved in the making of those tapes. And if her boss is intimately involved in the making of those torture tapes, the idea that she would not be completely aware of legislation that implicates those torture tapes is just, at this point, this is when every senator should get up and walk out and go, like, if you're not going to be honest with us, we're not going to waste our time.
Right. Oh, no, we were trying to create data space.
But we continue.
In the tapes, I don't recall pending legislation. I just don't recall
what
that.
About the issue of all of the white, the councils, the Council of the Vice President, DNI, Hipsing Ranking Member, the fact there was.
Senator, I don't know if I was aware of all of those, but I knew there were, there was disagreement about the issue of the tapes outside the agency, and that is why we were working toward a meeting with the then director to talk about those issues and how we address those concerns of people outside the agency. So I was working toward resolution within a process.
Well, with that overhang, I know other members will raise this.
And then we destroyed the
timing
tapes.
Seems, I hope I can get some more clarity on the timing.
Yeah, we were working towards a process to resolve it, and then we realized, let's just burn the tapes.
Like, why would we make this
let's
so
just
complicated?
Burn the torch tapes.
Just get rid of the
Whoops,
evidence.
Whoops, we can do that. So she acknowledges there was something going forward. And so the argument really is just like, I was just following orders of my boss.
Should dub her entire testimony with Richard Nixon voice.
Exactly. We have one more clip from this hearing, and we'll probably have more over the next couple of days from this Gina Haspel hearing. But here is Warner asking Haspel if torture is consistent with American values. And is this where she promises we're not going to torture again in the future? You know what would have been a great question? Are you going to render people to other countries where torture is legal? Oh, whoops. Go ahead.
I want to make sure I take my time, though. And I heard your statement about the fact that if you're confirmed, there will never be an interrogation program under your leadership. And you addressed the issue of the fact that it is against the law. Question I have, with the benefit of hindsight, do you believe the program, in terms of the interrogation program, was consistent with American values?
Senator, as we sit here today, and with some distance between us and the events of 9/11, the Congress and indeed our nation have had an opportunity to have a debate about the interrogation standards we want to use as the United States of America. We have decided to hold ourselves to a stricter moral standard for DOD that is defined in the Army Field Manual. I support the United States holding itself to that stricter moral standard, and I support the Army Field Manual.
But Ms. Haspel, that is...
All right, pause it here for 1 second. We're going to go back. I want to go play that back because here's the thing. The debate about torture did not start in 2002. Or 2003, or 5, or 11, or 12, or whenever. The debate about torture was pretty much settled, sometime around the Geneva Conventions, probably prior to that. Certainly, in terms of domestic law, it was settled in this country in 1993. So the idea that she is now qualifying her answer by saying, well, now that we have some distant proximity to 9/11, I can say with complete confidence. Now, of course, if we get closer to another 9/11, maybe that'll change. But the idea that we have debated torture and have come to a sort of a unique or different resolution than we had on September 10th, 2001, is a complete and total lie.
Hey, it was the aughts. Who among us didn't run a secret torture program?
It's true. Those were crazy times. Real depraved, for black sites.
Depraved time. Also, remember when I joked about how you guys were being sexist for criticizing Haspel? Well, the GOP did take it there.
Well, let's finish this footage first.
Senator, as we sit here today, and with some distance between us and the events of 9/11, the Congress and indeed our nation have had an opportunity to have a debate about the interrogation standards we want to use as the United States of America. We have decided to hold ourselves to a stricter moral standard for DOD that is defined in the Army Field Manual. I support the United States holding itself to that stricter moral standard, and I support the Army Field Manual.
But Ms. Aspel, that is answering on a legalistic. We're asking you to take on a position. I understand with RDI, you were downstream, not part of the policymaking. But if you're entrusted with this responsibility, I need to get a sense of what your moral code says about those kind of actions, because there is the potential that this president could ask you to do something. He obviously believes in these procedures, but even if he asks you to do something that is not directly related to detention and interrogation, but if he asks you to do something that you believe is morally questionable, even if there is an OLC opinion that in effect gives you a get out of jail free card, what will you do in that action when you are the director of the CIA?
Senator, my father's watching today. He served 33 years in the Air Force. My parents gave me a very strong moral compass. I support the higher moral standard that this country has decided to hold itself to. I would never, ever.
Pause it for 1 second. This country decided to hold ourselves to this moral standard 65, 70 years ago at a minimum. And she drafted that letter. She participated at the very least in the program after she became the head of that black site. This is just such out and out lies.
Also, she's being the opposite of legalistic. I mean, Warner said you're giving a legalistic answer. No, she literally just said, I support the normative choice to hold ourselves to the standards of obeying the law. That's literally what she just said. And I would also recommend, it's a little, you know, it's pretty disgusting, but if you go back and look in the, just, you know, there's clips available on YouTube of Jose Rodriguez bragging about this program in 2012.
Right.
And talking about the results they got from, you know, flying in a doctor from Johns Hopkins to save a guy's life just so he could be, brought back enough so that they could smack him around and waterboard him. And, you know, looking at his own history, going back, actually, in fact, to Latin America in the 1980s. Like, I wonder about the history and practices of where all of these people come from. But that's just, even that he would say, like, even when he's trying to grill her, like, I get you're being legalistic, when it's actually precisely the opposite is, I mean, I don't know. I'm not expecting anybody in this committee to even ask the rendition question.
The moral standard that this country has decided to hold itself to, I would never ever take CIA back to an interrogation program. First of all, CIA follows the law. We followed the law then. We follow the law today. I support the law. I wouldn't support a change in the law. But I'll tell you this. I would not put CIA officers at risk by asking them to undertake risky, controversial activity again.
Wow.
Well, there it is.
So it's a legal risk.
They decided, and then they undecided, and then they changed their minds, you know?
But they also, they told that they used this against Obama when he first came in. In some of the first meetings with CIA people, they were like, if you don't give us legal cover in general, like, we will literally sit on, you know, even things that are non-controversial, essentially. Like, we're holding you hostage to the process of even beginning to hold us accountable for anything.
I will say, too, the reason why Brennan could not become head of the CIA until the second term was because people, at least at the beginning of the term, cared about torture. And that quieted down quite a bit, I guess, down, in terms of like both Democratic senators and sort of Democrats in general. But this is the problem that you have. This is the problem that, you know, I think people at that time also said, you know, it's one thing you trust Barack Obama, but what if like a guy like Donald Trump became president?
We weren't even saying that. We would say like, oh, well, you know, what about some real lunatic? Like, I don't know. He named some idiot Republican senator.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Well, hey, guys, torture aside, it's time for some girl power in the CIA, as per the official GOP Twitter account.
Here you go. This is Jamie wrote up some stuff for the CIA to promote Gina Haspel. It's time for some girl power in the CIA. What else we got? Can we go back?
No.
Gina Haspel can help fix Jesus the CIA's Christ. Gender problem. Yeah, because part of their torture regime, too, is also to basically squeeze the testicles of prisoners until they fall off, I guess. Maybe that's the...
Yeah, take someone with a lot of girl power to do that.
No, that actually was part of it. They liked women administering beatings and desecrating the Quran because it added the like.
That's true.
They loved playing that on the torture program.
When I made that joke, I knew it was going to be about a few days before that happened for real. So thank you, GOP.
All right. Let's get into this Cohen stuff. I know we're going a little bit late here, but let's do this now. Back in, when was this? January 25th. I was on Chris Hayes' program, and we were talking about Don McGahn. But for, I guess it had been a couple of months since the Stormy Daniels story had come out. Maybe a month, right?
I think like 2 or 3 weeks, maybe.
Oh, 2 or 3 weeks? Okay. Yeah. So the Stormy Daniels came out, and it came out like following Steve Bannon's ejection from the White House. And to me, I found the whole story sort of puzzling, because who really cares that Donald Trump had an affair with anybody at this point? Why would that resonate in any way? And I think subsequent to this appearance on Hayes, it occurred to me that maybe this was really about the a prenup that Trump had with Melania, and that proof of it would cost him a lot of money. There must be some standard in this prenup. But in terms of hurting the Trump administration, this was my theory in January as to why we knew this information a year and a half after the event happened, and at a time where it was really largely irrelevant.
There's a lot of things that are coming out that are old news, right, over the past couple of weeks, since Steve Bannon has been basically cut adrift. The Stormy Daniels thing...
You seem to have a theory.
Well, look, there's a purian interest to the Stormy Daniels thing, but there were 11,000 LLCs that were established on the day that the one that paid off Stormy Daniels did. Somebody tipped those reporters off. And why they got this tip.
Oh, that's a good point. You're not, you can't just go like sort through the paperwork.
That would have taken you need to be looking for something.
Great point.
And so someone told them about something that happened a month before the election, where there was already plenty of evidence of this relationship from an interview from years before.
Right.
So there's something that's still out there that is associated with that payment that it was in someone's interest to have the press report on.
And it turns out that that LLC that was formed in Delaware on that day was not just about paying off Stormy Daniels, but ended up being some type of like large conduit for a lot of money.
It's a business.
Here it is. Here is Cohen's LLC. Can you expand that again? All right, so you have Michael Cohen at the in October of 26th, October 26th of 2016, he has to loan himself money because this entity has no money. He has to get a home equity to pay Stormy Daniels. But within 2 months, right, October 26th to January of 2017, money starts flowing in. First from Columbus Nova, which apparently is the American agent, if you will, for a Russian oligarch's hedge fund investing.
Nice.
Then money starts pouring in and starts flowing out towards Keith Davidson, who is an attorney, right? Is that the City National Bank? This is all flowing through Essential Consultants, LLC.
Oh, it definitely seems essential.
Super essential.
By November of 2017, Korea Aerospace Industries pays $150,000 for his consulting.
We make deal.
They're on the verge of some type of like a $13 billion deal, I think, with the American government. Just
hey, you know, stuff happens.
Then Novartis.
Who names
between
these?
October of 2017, right? That's like a year after he had to borrow money to pay off the Stormy Daniels. And January of 2018, so over the course of 2 months, pays him $400,000. Incidentally, Novartis, I think, has also been charged with trying to bribe Greek officials. They're a Swiss drug manufacturer.
When in Rome.
AT&T.
Wait, I think it actually turns out that Novartis, it ended up being $1.2 million.
Oh, really?
Because there was another payment. The Swiss drug company Novartis revealed Wednesday that special counsel Robert Mueller contacted the company last year about payments it made to Michael Cohen, President Trump's longtime personal attorney. And they're basically saying, like, yeah, we paid him $1.2 million. And then, you know, he just really wasn't... He just didn't actually have the skill set that we thought he had.
Yeah, exactly. AT&T gave him a couple hundred grand to get, and this is what they said, to gain insights into the thinking of the administration.
Certainly a lot of thinking going on.
Oh, there's a lot of deep thinking. You have a what? A merger?
Deep thinking.
So this is...
Oh, which reminds me of the, what is it, the Time Warner scumbag who was just like, it's the Democrats trying to limit my campaign contributions. There's the real threat to democracy. Yes. Anyways, there's this Cohen guy out in some taxi cab office in Queens. Apparently, he'll just grease everything over for us. It's a lot more simple than standard Washington K Street corruption. I love this.
All right. Now, we don't have a clip of Michael Avanti, who is the lawyer who released this information. Now, there's a lot of speculation as to where did he get this information that has sort of broke open these stories about Michael Cohen and the flow of money. And there's a lot of speculation about it. Some people believe that all of this information came specifically from a SARS report, with SARS being a suspicious activity report that are filed by banks when there's suspicious activity.
You have to go so far out of your way to get a bank to voluntarily file.
Well, no, these actually happen fairly regularly. In fact, this is what got Elliot Spitzer. If you take $10,000 out in cash.
Oh, I see.
Or if you take $9,950.
Is this what got Hastert too?
I think that is also what got Hastert. The bank is required to file a report. If money comes into your account.
Is that Dodd-Frank or is that terrorism laws?
No, this is prior to that. It could be terrorism, but this is what Rush Limbaugh got busted on for his buying of OxyContin.
Regulations really work.
9999. He kept taking out in terms of cash to pay his cleaning lady, apparently. But
at least he paid her.
There's also those are more sort of like retail banking things. There's other things that come from corporations when a certain amount of money goes through. I don't know if it's $100,000 or $200,000 or whatever it is. Those payments need to be reported. I think it was Novartis paid like $50 under, like $99,950 or something. And that also triggered it.
Nice.
Missed it by that much.
I love it. I love that like this.
So somehow he got a hold of the SARS things. But last night on O'Donnell, he was implying... Wasn't saying this straight out, but he was asking questions as if the type of questions you would ask if you felt like you already had the answer and that you were going to maybe be able to provide it in the future. And he was saying, the real question is not the money flowing in to Cohen's LLC. The real question is, where was the money flowing out? Because he said, if you look at this LLC, the payments that come out of it, because usually on a single person LLC, when he is the only member of the partnership, it is a pass through. So you'll set it up if you're getting paid from a bunch of different sources, you will establish one of these LLCs, or if you have some other small business, you want to retain some type of arm's length in terms of liability for lawsuits or whatnot, you'll establish these things. And usually what happens is you pay yourself out of those. You pay your Social Security tax, you pay both ends, whatever. You give yourself a payroll, maybe you give yourself a dividend at the end of the year or something like that. And that money does not add up to the amount of money that came in. So the question is, who's getting their cut? And Avanti was just like, oh, it could be. But, you know, Donald Trump's the type of guy who doesn't like people trading off his name without getting a taste. Right? And so,
I feel like in a day, Trump's going to be like, of course I got a cut because I'm not stupid. Hello. I know how to do business.
You're going
to
pay someone off and not get a cut?
Yeah, why would you punish success?
Yeah, or Giuliani go, of course he got it back. Of course he got the money back. And it's perfectly legal.
Okay, here is Michael Avanti on George Stephanopoulos' program this morning, basically saying to Cohen, hey, if there's nothing, no problem here, don't you think it's appropriate that you show us the bank records?
Michael Cohen and the president can clear this up this morning very easily. Michael Cohen should release the bank statements from this account, this single account, from October of 16 until April of this year, so he can disclose to the American people what money was received or not received.
Let's take what's been confirmed, though. AT&T has confirmed the payments. Novartis has confirmed the payments. Columbus Nova has confirmed the payments, although they said it had nothing to do with Russia. What is illegal about that? Michael Cohen, attorney for the president, close to the president, sets up a firm in Washington, D.C., gives strategic consulting advice. What's wrong with that?
Well, wait a minute. We don't know what advice he was giving. Here's what we do know. Each company has given a different reason for retaining Michael Cohen. Real estate, business consulting,
Renaissance
healthcare
man.
Consulting, the list goes on and on. Michael Cohen.
But nothing wrong with any of that,
well,
correct?
Maybe there may in fact be something wrong with
it. What would that
be? For the following reason. He's not a registered lobbyist. He hasn't made required disclosures relating to lobbying activities, depending on the fact or if
AT&T said he wasn't lobbying. They didn't hire him to lobby.
Well, what'd they hire him for then?
Vision.
It's unclear, right? Clearly, it's unclear. In fact, the more you dig, the more stories we hear from these companies. Here's the other problem. If he's taking money from a foreign
he's
national,
a good guy.
That could pose a significant legal problem for him as it relates to taking dollars from overseas companies, et cetera. So we don't know where this ends, but it doesn't smell right, George.
You said could right there. What we heard there from Vexelberg and from Columbus Nova is that he did not have anything to do with the hiring of Michael Cohen. This was not his money.
All right. Well,
any evidence to the contrary?
Yeah, we have significant evidence to the contrary. Let me say this. We haven't released all the evidence that we have. I think any claim by Columbus that they have no ties to Renova,
no ties to the hiring of Michael Cohen.
Well, no, but they also tried to claim last night that they had no ties to Renova, that they're a completely separate company, unaffiliated. We know that's not true. I think there's 45 SEC filings where the two companies are linked. George, look. Something doesn't smell right. And if it's above board and there's no improper conduct, Michael Cohen should release the bank statements and the bank records for the American people to see. And if
there you go. Guess what Michael Cohen's not going to do, ladies and gentlemen?
Says who?
Yeah. Says who? Says who? A lot of times, companies will just randomly find a lower tier law school lawyer who represents gangsters in Queens and just say, I just like your energy. Why don't you come just do a vision session with us for $1 million? Or right under the withdraw account for a SARS report. Gotta hate SARS, both kinds.
I gotta
say, the Asian kind and the bank kind, the worst.
Both essential and necessary. That's what your company name should be.
Says who?
wasn't Cohen, was it Lewandowski that had the Sterling Cooper LLC?
Yes. Okay.
Oh my God, are you serious?
Yes. That was totally Lewandowski. He was just like, yeah, I'm doing like PR. Who does PR? Mad Men don't. Trying to ask the president a question. I'll freaking dislocate your shoulder, even if you work for Breitbart, freaking broad.
These Cohen payments are dubious. At best.
They're a little dubious. They couldn't even. What's amazing is just the way they are, like the system of American corruption has become so bureaucratized and elaborate, and they're just taking us back to like the duffel bag era.
I hope that we also have an equal amount of consternation about Novartis and AT&T paying him as a Russian oligarch. I mean, here's the thing.
Oh, I would say more. Probably.
This has been my contention from the beginning. We should be upset about Russian influence on our election, just as we should be upset about the influence of any mass entity on our election that clearly does not have the American public's interest in mind. And, you know, this is, man, I think every governmental decision that has impacted Novartis, that Korean aerospace company or whatever it was, the AT&T, these should all basically be investigated immediately.
Let me ask you this. Would you as a company, in addition to all the other business we discussed today, have any interest in a very lucrative U-Haul-based startup in the borough of Queens? We got fucking Han medallions in it again, my friend? And I see no reason why yous, as the Korean airspace company, should not be involved in all aspects
start
of travel.
Crashing planes.
Yeah, right.
Perhaps you've heard about diversification. Very important not to keep all your eggs in one basket.
No.
You got this phone business. You got this other, like the TV business. What about some type of transportation?
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I was reading in the InFlight magazine that you people have a real problem with people getting sad over there and jumping off of cliffs. Why could that not be applied to a certain, shall we say, insurance-based model with air travel?
The AT&T thing really did rewet my appetite for Avenatti on TV because it, like, when people were talking about this a new Red Scare, it's like, well, it's not communists this time, it's oligarchs.
Yeah, it's oligarchs. So, like, what is
the tabloid?
It's amazing. Yes, like Russia, exactly. Russia is what Republicans want. They want a
mafia,
predator capitalist mafia
state.
It's an oil mafia capital state with a religious hierarchy that enforces far-right social norms. This is what Republicans want. It's crazy.
That's also why it's not McCarthyism, because McCarthyism, it seems to me, was founded on the idea of like an ideology, like you were trying to stamp out an ideology. Well,
there's people in the State Department that sympathetic to communism. There are people in the State Department doing meetings with Novartis for scam LLCs off.
Yes, exactly. What is the ideology that you supposedly have if you are supportive of the Russian government?
Well, actually, maybe Putinism, written in a sort of, if we're really, really elastic with that term.
Is that really an ideology, or
no,
is it really just like
money?
It's just
power.
Yeah, it's just gangsterism.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, some people seem to be a little confused still.
A little bit.
I see people conflating the old USSR with modern-day Russia all the time.
Yeah. But I mean, it's funny, though. Like, both alarmists and defenders, and they're both just wrong.
Right. Yeah, it's weird. Pretty weird, guys.
All right. Well, it's a very weird time, folks. We went late. We had a lot of news to catch up on. We still have a lot of stuff to talk about, actually.
A lot of stuff.
Avenatti
keeps justifying his overexposure, though. I have to
more
say.
AT&T stuff, Avenatti.
Yeah, more AT&T stuff.
That dude.
He knows how to drip it, though. Like, he's good at this.
Oh, my God.
He's really good at this.
I want that guy to represent me. I just need to figure out who to sue.
That's probably what Trump's thinking.
I'm going to sue everyone.
Sue everyone.
You're all going to be sued. Folks, don't make me hire Michael Avenatti to get you to become a member of the Majority Report. I will sue each and every one of you.
Are you sure that people were using illegal logins to the premium content? Well, that is a... George, we're not going to release all the evidence we have.
We need to get serious about IP here at Majority Report.
Folks, it is your membership that makes this show possible. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, we say thank you by giving you extra content almost every day. We didn't over the past 2 days because we were, but we we had some great interviews. And if you are one of those people who are going through financial troubles and want access to the member show, please don't hesitate. Email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We never turn anyone away for finances. Just have a little patience in terms of getting to the emails. Also, tonight is Wednesday, but it is it's TMBS Annex Day, right?
Annex?
Well, we was going to do it yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Well,
Annex Wednesday.
We just got pushed because of the... So actually, there'll be a slightly new set design for TMBS tonight. But tonight, Glenn Greenwald and Julia Salazar, who's a state Senate candidate.
Oh, nice. Yeah. She's my DSA comrade.
Yeah, she's great.
Hell
and
yeah.
She'll be in studio, and Glenn and I are going to talk about what's happening. He's actually, you know, really close on the... We're going to be focusing on Brazil mainly, but we'll touch on some other stuff as well.
And you'll be doing the whole interview in Portuguese.
That's exactly right. That's it.
I'll be translating.
I would love to do a tape with Matt as a translator. I don't know why. I just feel like that would be very funny.
And don't forget Antifada. You can find at patreon.com/theantifada.
Indeed. We were planning to drop a new episode tonight, but maybe we'll move it to tomorrow so as not to compete with TMBS.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Aww.
There's room for all of us.
All right, folks. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, 646-257-3920 is the number. We'll be right back.
You right. Are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun.
I wanted to... Wait, stop this, because I wanted to... You were playing this.
Stop, hold on.
We got an email from a listener, Hal. Hi, everybody. My 16-year-old son is often around when I listen to the Majority Report later in the day. He particularly likes the audio mix-up of the Sebastian Gorka quotes that you sometimes run prior to the fun half. We were running that. I was driving him home from high school yesterday, and our route takes us past a small wetland adjacent to a medium-sized creek. There were a half a dozen male mallard ducks swimming about, but no other birds we could see. We both commented saying things like, "Hi, ducks." We rode on in silence for a couple of minutes. Then my son spoke using his Gorka voice imitation. The alpha male go quack, quack, quack. Great stuff.
That is so awesome. That's so cool.
All right. DJ Danner.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.